at NPR.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, provisional ballots are being increasingly rejected in Pennsylvania. To find out why, I talked to Carter Walker of Vote Beat PA. He's got that story and more Pennsylvania election news coming up in just a couple of minutes. But first, local news in Sullivan County, where the legislature has announced the members of its newly reformed Human Rights Commission. The county's Human Rights Commission was founded in 2005, but it had been inactive since it last met in the summer of 2022. That break followed a period when multiple members had resigned, and it preceded the resignation of then-executive director of Sullivan County Human Rights Commission, Adrienne Jensen, in 2023. Now, this announcement of new appointees to the commission comes right after the hiring of Ramon E. Wilson as the county's first full-time executive director of the Human Rights Commission. The nine new human rights commissioners are Joel Santiago, a small business owner from Monticello, Ari Mir Pontier, a Barryville resident, former commissioner, and former executive director of the commission, Amanda Ward, District 8 legislator for Sullivan County and a South Fallsburg native, Charles Wade, a local DJ and resident of Wurtsboro, Margaret Gans, energy management consultant from Coshecton, Bill Liblick, a prior member of the commission who lives in Swan Lake, Ricardo Nieves, local business owner from Woodridge, Miranda Behan, a Fallsburg council person from Hurleyville, and Alex Portugal, a Jewish community leader from Monticello. County Legislative Chair Nadia Raj said the county wants a commission that's relevant and responsive to the community and that, quote, our commitment is reflected by the fact that we aren't required by law to have such a commission, but we would prefer citizens, nonprofits, and businesses have someone local to reach out to, so we've made the necessary investment, end quote from Sullivan County Legislative Chair. And that's not all we have for Sullivan County Human Rights News, because tonight you will get to meet its new executive director. Patricio Rabayo talks to Ramon E. Wilson coming up in the second half of this program. But right now it's time to talk to Carter Walker, reporter for Vote Beat, working in partnership with Spotlight PA. Carter has published an article. It's about the growing problem of provisional ballots being rejected in Pennsylvania due to technical errors, an issue that's preventing eligible voters from having their voices heard, and an issue that's just getting worse. So why is it happening? As usual, Carter's reporting reveals that the answer is complicated. From poll worker training gaps to complicated ballot designs, inconsistent practices across counties, we also talked to Carter about the primary in PA that's just a few weeks away. I spoke to Carter Walker earlier this afternoon. Carter Walker, welcome back to the local edition.
Thanks for having me back.
For people who may not know, can you explain first what a provisional ballot is supposed to be and how it works in Pennsylvania before we get into the updates to provisional ballots?
Yeah, so provisional ballot, it was created about two decades ago, federally. And it's supposed to be an option of last resort for voting. So if there's some kind of dispute on whether or not a person is eligible to vote, they can vote a provisional ballot, and then the county or the election administrator or wherever can take a look at that person later on and determine, okay, were they registered? Are they eligible to vote? And it prevents them from casting a normal ballot, which would automatically be counted, but still preserves their right to vote if they, in fact, are eligible and whomever was challenging their eligibility, like a poll worker, was mistaken.
Right. And in your article, you highlight the experience of one voter, Ms. Beck. What does her story show us about the larger problems that voters are facing?
Yeah, the Ms. Beck, her experience in the 2024 election is really indicative of this problem that we wanted to explore. So ever since you know well that Pennsylvania only recently implemented no-excuse mail voting, and that was adopted by many, many voters, one of the reasons that a person might cast the provisional ballot, there's a lot of reasons, like they forgot their ID at the polling place, or maybe they went to the wrong polling place because they're mistaken and their name isn't in the poll book. But one of the reasons that they might need to cast the provisional ballot is that they received a mail ballot, yet they hadn't turned it back into the county yet. And obviously, we don't want people voting twice. So they're asked to vote a provisional ballot. And as the county later determines, okay, they only cast the provisional and not the mail ballot, then it will be counted. The problem that Ms. Beck experienced, which a lot of people have, an increasing amount of people have been experiencing since we implemented mail voting, is that her ballot was rejected because she didn't completely fill out the exterior envelope. The provisional ballot, much like a mail ballot, is supposed to go in a secrecy envelope and then an outer envelope. And that outer envelope needs to be signed and dated. But unlike the mail ballot envelope, it has a lot more places that that information needs to be filled out on, which is leading to a lot of folks not filling that information out and then having their ballots rejected for reasons that don't necessarily have to do with their eligibility to vote.
What's leading to these problems that people are having with using these provisional ballots? And specifically, why are so many being rejected?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And unfortunately, the answer is not entirely clear. I think it's a little murky because the data that the state collects on why these ballots are rejected, it doesn't really get down to a granular level. Like, is it because of this one signature on the envelope that's required, or is it because something the poll worker didn't fill out, or is it a secrecy envelope issue? Because the state's not collecting data at that granular level, they just say envelope error, it's hard to know exactly what the increase is caused by, which part of the envelope is most problematic. But election officials that I speak with, they think the reason we're seeing more and more people get their ballots rejected each year because of these envelope errors, it's a combination of things. Number one, we've had a tremendous amount of turnover in our election staff, not just the people at the top in the county offices, but also our poll workers over the last couple of years. So obviously, there's some institutional knowledge there that has been lost, and we've seen that affect elections in other ways. Number two, I mean, this outer envelope is admittedly kind of confusing. There, you have to sign this one box, and then you have to fill out your address. But if your address is different than where you were registered, you got to fill that out. And then you got to sign this other spot, and then the poll workers have to sign it twice and date it. So there's just a lot that needs to get completed. Another thing is we don't really have uniform training all over the state. You know, the Department of State puts together a training program, but each county kind of decides how it's going to train its poll workers and what they're going to put in these poll worker manuals that they give out to their poll workers. It's supposed to be like a reference guide on election day, and each one can be a little bit different. Like I looked at one of these manuals in Delaware County. That was very robust, had really clear instructions, seemed pretty well put together. I looked at one from another county that it didn't have as much information. It didn't say explicitly, like the Delaware County manual, that voters need to sign both places or their ballot would be rejected. So it could also be a training issue.
I'm always asking you, like, how much willingness is there on the part of lawmakers to try to fix some of these problems you have? Like, is there awareness of the issue? Like, what's actually being done about this issue, if anything?
Yeah, well, I think there's certainly an awareness of this across the state. First of all, you know, county election directors, they certainly are aware of the problem. And they told me that they've been asking the Department of State to see what it can do to redesign this envelope, make it a little bit more user-friendly. Second of all, there have been some bills introduced in both the House and the Senate here the past two last legislative session. But unfortunately, neither of those made it out of the committee stage, and I haven't seen them yet reintroduced here this session. So I think, like many issues in Pennsylvania, while there is an awareness that this something needs to be done for election issues specifically, we're not really seeing a lot of movement right now.
Right. And that does fit in with all the conversations that we've had in the last year or so. Yes, that seems to sound familiar. Well, you know, as you're working on elections in Pennsylvania, I'm wondering what you might be working on next. What are any other stories you might be tracking down, if it's something you can give us any kind of a preview of?
Yeah. So your voters might have seen a incident of election fraud in southeastern Pennsylvania. I'm sorry, your listeners might have seen that in Delaware County. So I've been trying to do some reporting out of there, see what happened in that situation, the mayoral race from 2021. And then, of course, we have a primary coming up in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I will give the listeners all the details on this again in a moment. But yeah, the primary in Pennsylvania, the 2025 municipal primary, is May 20th. And polls will be open from 7 in the morning to 8 in the evening. For the work that you do in reporting on elections, what does this primary mean, if anything? What are you watching for?
Yeah, well, I haven't decided exactly where I'm going to go yet, but it's one of the less busy primaries. It's going to be for, you know, local city council races and those kind of positions. But I guess we'll be watching to see if the mail ballot rejection trend stays lower, if so we could finally attribute that to the changes the Department of State made to the envelope, or if it was just better education for voters during the general election last year. That's definitely one thing I'll be keeping an eye on. And of course, with the provisional ballots, I'm going to want to see, okay, are they still getting rejected for these reasons?
Yeah. I'm wondering if there are less problems with elections when it's like a municipal level primary like this? And if so, is that because there's just less people voting overall, or do some of the issues that we talk about affect statewide and higher office races more so than municipal races?
I think it's election directors would probably say it's more of a trade-off of issues. Like, for instance, you won't see the kind of long lines you saw for our workaround of early voting here in Pennsylvania. You won't see what we saw last November. But, you know, the problem that arises in primaries, especially in the municipal years, is there's typically a lot more races on the ballot, which can make designing that ballot more of a challenge. And when you see stories about, oh, well, they misspelled somebody's name, or they have the wrong candidate in the wrong district on a ballot, a lot of the times that's in the municipal years, which there actually was a story of that from Lackawanna County, a ballot error just this morning. So it's kind of, you trade one set of problems for a different one.
Well, when it comes to elections, we keep an eye on the results, but then we keep an eye on our phone so we can talk to you about how the elections are being run, because that's your beat. It's the Vote Beat, Vote Beat PA. We've been talking to Carter Walker, and this news is up now at votebeat.org/Pennsylvania. Carter, thank you so much for talking to us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And just a reminder that the municipal primary election in Pennsylvania is Tuesday, May 20th. That's just 3 weeks away. Tuesday, May 20th. Polls open 7 a.m. They close at 8 p.m. The last day to register to vote for this primary is next Monday, May 5th. The last day to apply for a mail-in or absentee ballot for registered voters is the Tuesday after that, May 13th. And the deadline for Pennsylvania County election offices to receive completed mail-in and absentee ballots, that's 8 p.m. on primary day, which again is May 20th.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I'm Jason Dole. It is The Local Edition. And as I said at the top of the show, this week, Sullivan County announced the lineup of its newly reformed Human Rights Commission. Last week, the county announced the hiring of its brand new first ever full-time executive director of that commission, Ramon E. Wilson. Would you like to meet him and learn more? And so would I. And that's why it's a good thing that Radio Catskill's Patricio Raballo spoke with Mr. Wilson about his life, his background, his career, and his plans for the commission.
Welcome to the program, Ramon.
Thank you, Patricio. Nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, you have an extensive career, not only in community service, but also in the music business. But before we get into all that stuff, I just want to see your background as far as, like, where did you grow up and what was your upbringing like?
Sure, absolutely. So, yes, I am originally from Newark, New Jersey. Grew up there, went to high school there. And it was, as you are aware, or maybe aware, Newark is the largest city in the state of New Jersey. And It's pretty diverse in its population. So I had a lot of great experiences growing up. I was born in the inner city, and I was exposed to so many different things, which pretty much helped crafted my path towards human rights.
Right. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of your music career. You were a music director for some big names like Wyclef Jean, Mary Kay Blige, Toni Braxton, Mariah Carey. How did music get into your life, and how did music become such an important part of your life?
Sure, absolutely. Growing up in an African-American household, the Baptist church was pretty much the cornerstone of our lives. It was a resource for hope and inspiration. And I grew up in a pretty popular Baptist church in the neighborhood, Clearview Baptist Church. And there I discovered my love and passion for music. I started there as a drummer for our young adult choir at the age of 6 years old, and then gradually started to gravitate more towards the organ and piano instruments. And yeah, it started from there. And then as I got older, I was able to go to a prestigious performing arts high school in the city of Newark. And that's how I got really exposed to different types of music from different genres, including classical, jazz, modern pop, hip hop, R&B, et cetera. I had the opportunity of playing alongside some phenomenal musicians who later on became pretty great in their own respect.
Wow, that's amazing. And how did you get into working with them? Did you audition to be part of a band for the musicians, or how did that happen?
So it's funny, just through being able to travel throughout New York, New Jersey, the metropolitan area with a local band, I actually played a lot of gigs in Manhattan at the Blue Note, Cafe Y. So just being in on that New York music scene very young had allowed for me to start meeting some of the big names that was coming through some of those clubs at the time. And yeah, so it pretty much started that way.
Now you're the executive director for the Human Rights Commission. How did that happen? How did you transition from being the musical director to some of these big stars to human rights and advocacy work?
Sure. As we all know, the music industry had took a change in terms of the landscape of how music was distributed throughout the world. It was more so physical CDs shipped through your typical brick and mortar chains and big stores, to now being able to access music worldwide through devices like your phone and the internet. So because at that time it was pretty evolutionary and things weren't really thought out 100%, the dynamic of how musicians and producers worked changed significantly. So at that time, I've seen a lot of budgets get cuts from major projects that I was working on. Although touring was expanding at the time, I was traveling and I was doing a lot of traveling, actually. I really wanted to get more into actually producing records and making that transition and seeing how that particular part of the industry had changed. I was a little worried. So I started to transition into more things that I also was very passionate about, including human rights, civil rights, even considered the possibility of going to law school, becoming a lawyer. So yeah, that's how that transition started. I started volunteering with a lot of local organizations focusing on human rights, tenant rights. I also worked for a big property management company, residential property management company in Newark, as a compliance officer, monitoring interactions with tenants and the owners of different properties. And so I started to establish a love just for human services generally.
Right. And now you're the executive director for the Human Rights Commission. You're the first full-time director. Previously has been part-time. So I just want to know, as a new executive director, I'm sure you have to get to know Sullivan County more. What are your first priorities as a new executive director for the Human Rights Commission?
Wow, that's a really good question. I would say some of my initial priorities are strengthening public trust, ensuring equal access to services, expanding education about rights and protections, also addressing issues like housing, discrimination, and consumer affairs is a big component that I really want to put a big focus on, taking a more proactive approach with regards to solution-driven outcomes.
Right. Now, the Human Rights Commission hasn't been active in the past couple of years. And one thing you talked about in the press release was the importance of mediation. Can you talk a little bit more about that, the sort of importance of mediation and why you believe in resolving issues before they escalate?
Absolutely. I just think, based on my own personal experiences, that most times people don't intend to violate one's human rights. It could be something as simple as just a lack of understanding or education. A big part of what I want to do here with the support of the county county manager, is to put out education, seminars, engaging the diversity of our communities here in Solomon County, and to having the ability when the issue arises to sit down together with respect for one another and to do everything in our power to mediate those situations. And most times things can be resolved that way if people just have a true understanding to what they may have been misunderstood about. And so, yeah, I think that's a big part of the job for me, is to be able to clear up some of those misunderstandings and put a real approach at trying to resolve those issues before they have to be escalated.
Now, we talked a little bit about your background in growing up in Newark. I just wanted just curious about how has your background growing up in Newark shaped the way you approach your work today?
Great question again. Yeah, so growing up in Newark, it's a city comprised of roughly 300,000 people. That's just one city in the state inside of Essex County. Working and living in Newark have taught me how to get along with people from all walks of life. I'm sorry, we have a bunch of diversity in terms of immigrants and people that came and found a way to live here in the United States. In the city of Newark particularly, there's a big African community, a big Portuguese community, big Mexican community. Being able to live and work amongst so many different people coming from so many different places pretty much gave me a good appreciation for just human interaction and respect and being able to accept someone regardless of where they come from. That helped position me to aim towards this career.
Now, just going back a little bit, your previous work right before this, you was director of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now that term has become a political point now with the current administration dismantling federal DEI programs and the potential that ripple effects can have. How do you anticipate these changes impacting your work with Solomon County Human Rights Commission?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's definitely become a focal political conversation in terms of how this is going to look for us as just American citizens overall. I think it's just very important for us to understand that we do live in a diverse nation, and that's just something that's not going to ever change as long as we keep the Constitution intact. So, yeah, I'm sure there's going to be some challenges there. There's going to be some struggles there. But my job is to continue to fight to make sure that foundations of our Constitution and the respect and love for one another continues. Yeah, I can't give you a direct answer in terms of what I might face, but I can tell you that I'm definitely gearing up for the challenge to make sure diversity, equity, and inclusion are all staples here in Solomon County.
Yeah. So let's talk about how it works. If something happens on, say, a job site or somewhere, and they feel the Human Rights Commission can help them, they come to your office. Can you walk us through the process of someone gives you a grievance and what happens after that?
Sure. So there's several ways that my office can be contacted. There is an opportunity for individuals here in Solomon County to file a complaint via our website, or they can actually send me an email, reach out to me via phone, or stop over here in my office. So once that happens and someone says, hey, I feel like there's been a potential that my human rights have been violated, it was my job to view the inquiry and determine whether it fits the criteria. And if it does, then to gather all information necessary, meet with all parties involved, get a firm understanding of what's going on, and then take the initial approach of mediation, trying to bring both parties together to figure out how we can resolve it, if it can be resolved. And at that point, if it is, then, you know, we'll be able to close the case. We'll obviously keep all documentation on file as long as, you know, we're required to. And then if the situation can't be resolved and we found that there was, in fact, an infringement on someone's human rights, then at that point, my office has the ability to make the referral up to the state level. And at that point, the state will investigate. And then at that point, they'll be able to determine that the actions going forward.
And now you have a board with you. You have a Human Rights Commission board, I guess, what did you call it? Oh, you talk about what exactly their role in this whole scheme of things. And when, say, a human rights grievance comes to you, what is their role in your office?
Right now, from what I understand, the board is comprised of representatives from a district or a community here in Solomon County. Their job is to obviously keep a more direct pulse on that particular community. We are going to work in collaboration with each other, with myself and the board, to figure out more proactive ways to get education out there, to figure out ways that we can have a direct impact in each one of the communities here in Sullivan County and be able to bring a very comprehensive way of dealing with issues here together. So we're still formulating how this is going to work. I haven't formally met the board members yet. I anticipate that'll happen in the next couple of days, and we can start to really plan and figure out how we can be impactful here.
No, definitely. Now, we talked about folks coming to your office, and I'm just curious about what do you hope residents feel when they walk into your office or call you for help? What do you want to walk away with afterwards?
Yeah, just a real sense of empathy. Someone who, I want the community members here to feel like they are being heard genuinely. Their issues are taken very seriously, that we are providing the tools necessary for us to live together in harmony here in Solo County, to accept everyone, regardless of their race, their creed, their background, to be able to live in unity. More importantly, to draw a commonality between government and community, because I know in most instances, I wouldn't say most, but in some instances, those lines can get blurred where maybe people don't feel like they have that level of access. I felt immediately welcome coming here on board with the county government, with all personnel that I've been introduced to. And I want to be able to give our residents that same ability to feel welcome, to feel heard, to feel that they have someone that's genuinely taking an interest into their concerns.
What is your long-term vision for the Human Rights Commission here in Sullivan County?
Great question. To be able to develop a presence that genuinely focuses on not just human rights, but consumer affairs, being able to be an extension to the businesses here in Sullivan County. I know that small business is a big deal here. So being able to provide resources and be someone, or at least an office that our businesses can depend on to sort out some issues that may happen between them and residents, to provide a lot of education on consumer affairs. I think we've been focusing a lot on your human rights aspect, but consumer affairs is just as important. So I think the long-term goal for me is to have this office omnipresent throughout the county to be able to provide those resources to our small businesses, as well as people that live in the communities.
Ramon, anything else that we have not touched on you want folks to know about you, about your tenure, your future tenure as the executive director for this Sullivan County Human Rights Commission?
I think you've covered it all with your great questions. So I would just like to extend that once again, I'm here for the community. I am a community guy. I plan on working and aligning myself with our county manager's vision, and he and I is in conjunction with Michelle, who is the deputy manager. We plan to really give this office a real focus. And yeah, I'm here. I'm looking to meet everyone throughout the county as often as I'm able to. I plan on being out in the county, spending a lot of time in the community, meeting with organizations, police departments, schools, et cetera. So yeah, I just want everyone to know that I'm very focused on doing my part here in the great work in the great county of Sullivan.
Ramon, thank you so much for talking to me. I do really appreciate it. It's nice meeting you, at least over the phone, and I hope to meet you in person soon. And I'm sure this won't be the last time we speak. I'm sure we'll definitely bring you on a couple of times throughout the year to let us know what you're working on and give us some more information, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And I do also appreciate this time and looking forward to meeting you as well, formally.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio, for that interview. And thank you for listening to the Local Edition. That's just about it for the Local Edition tonight. I've been your host, Jason Dole. And I say that it's just about it for the Local Edition because I do have one more item for you right now. Just giving you this reminder, this heads up, perhaps you had not heard, but the White House is planning to release a proposal that would claw back already approved funding for public media, including this radio station that you're listening to right now. If Congress agrees, Radio Catskill could lose critical support immediately. And really mess up our plans, make things a lot more difficult to bring you local news and information like we bring you here on the Local Edition. So do what you can to help save local radio stations like Radio Catskill. You do that by urging your lawmakers to oppose the rescissions package. It has not been approved yet, but this is something that we're anticipating happens. So you can urge your lawmakers to oppose this. And you can find out more information at wjffradio.org. That's our website, wjffradio.org, or check out protectmypublicmedia.org. That's protectmypublicmedia.org. Share the link with a friend. Spread the word, because things are going to be moving very quickly here this week and next week in the world of public media, and we could use your help. Laura Flanders and Friends is up at 7, followed by Trailer Talk at 7:30. But stay with us right now for more news with The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
WJFF, Jeffersonville. Radio Catskill.